All right, ready to go deep. Today, we're tackling a story that's, well, it's ancient history, but it's also a bit of a mirror. The fall of Samaria. You might be thinking, ancient kingdoms, who cares? But stick with me, because this isn't just about some lost civilization. It's about how a society that was thriving could basically vanish.
Yeah.
Like overnight.
What's so interesting is that Samaria's downfall, it's described in 2 Kings 17, and it wasn't like some sudden earthquake or something. It was more like a slow burn, you know, like a bunch of choices, kind of chipping away, and then bam, gone.
We're using a lecture here by Dr. John Oswald. He's a biblical scholar. And he really makes this case that it wasn't just about armies or bad luck. Samaria was taken down by something way sneakier. Their own, like, golden calves, to put it that way.
Now, I know we've all heard about that whole golden calf thing back in Exodus, right? But Dr. Oswald, he argues that for Samaria, those calves, they were anything, anything at all, that they valued more than their relationship with God.
So not just statues, but anything that became, like, the center of their world. Okay, that's kind of unsettling because now I'm thinking, wait, what are my golden calves? Like, is it work? Is it that new phone I keep thinking about?
You got it. And 2 Kings 17, it lists all these sins that Samaria was caught up in. Idol worship, breaking God's laws, but it's like a broken record, you know, stuck on worshiping other gods. And here's the thing. Archaeology actually backs this up. We found stuff in Samaria, fancy houses, imported goods, luxury stuff. And this was during times their own texts talk about famines. Warnings.
Hold on. So they were ignoring, like, literal warnings just to keep up their lifestyle. That's crazy. It's like they were picking temporary comfort over, well, over everything else that mattered.
And get this, it gets even wilder. They weren't just worshiping random gods. They were straight up copying the Canaanites, the very people God had driven out of the land because of that stuff.
So it's not even like they came up with their own bad ideas. They were like copying the homework of the kids who flunked out.
Mm-hmm.
So did that mean they literally started believing in those Canaanite gods, or was it more like subtle?
I think it's a bit of both. Some totally switched teams God-wise, but for others, it was more like this slow cultural creep. Their art started using Canaanite designs. Their society started looking like the one they were told to avoid. Like, they forgot why God had given them their own specific way of life.
That whole returning to their vomit line from Isaiah. Yikes. Not a pretty picture, but man, it fits. It makes me think, are there things we do even when we know better that we just keep getting sucked back into? Bad habits.
Now, that is a question to think about. And it leads us to this really interesting thing in 2 Kings 17, where they put King Jeroboam's story. Remember him? The golden calf guy way back. Well, they stick his story at the end of Samaria's sin list, not the beginning.
Wait, so it's not in order. Dr. Oswald says that's on purpose, right? To show how, like, little compromises, they can snowball into huge problems later on.
Exactly. Jeroboam, he probably thought he was making things easier for his people, letting them worship closer to home instead of going all the way to the temple in Jerusalem. Probably seemed harmless.
But instead, it kicked off, like, generations of them drifting further and further from what they were supposed to be doing. It's that journey of 1,000 miles starts with one step thing. Suddenly, small choices feel a lot heavier.
Which makes you wonder, right? What are those seemingly small compromises we make that could be putting us on a path, you know, one we don't even mean to be on? Are we so busy with convenience or comfort that we miss the bigger picture?
Ooh, getting personal. But it's good to think about, right? Because it's not always the big dramatic sins that get us. It's the little stuff we let slide, thinking, ah, no big deal.
And that's where understanding how the ancient Israelites saw actions, that's key. For them, it wasn't just about what you believed up here in your head. It was about what you did. Your actions proved your faith, not just words.
That makes the Lord's Supper, wow, it hits different, doesn't it? Do this in remembrance of me. That's not just like thinking about Jesus. It's about actively living because of what he did. What else does that act of remembering apply to?
That's the question, isn't it? And with all this talk about what Samaria did wrong, gotta remember what Dr. Oswald says next. Even while they were messing up, God was, like, incredibly patient with them, faithful.
He'd rescued them from Egypt, given them the promised land, sent prophets to guide them.
Well,
like, he kept giving them chance after chance.
Which means their actions, they weren't just breaking rules, they were rejecting God's constant grace. It's like they'd literally forgotten their own history, how they'd been rescued. Makes me think, do we do that? Do our actions show that we remember God's goodness in our lives? Or are we acting like we got here all on our own?
That's a tough one. And it makes this whole forgetting God idea even deeper. Dr. Oswald's clear. It's not just a bad memory. It's about how our actions either match up with what we believe or they totally contradict it.
And that takes us to another big point, how Samaria kept following the trends of the nations around them. They were supposed to be different, set apart, living by a different standard, but they just kept getting pulled back in to the popular culture of the time.
Like they couldn't resist what everyone else was doing, even when they knew it was wrong.
And that shows like a fundamental clash, two totally different ways of seeing the world. The surrounding nations, it was all about the here and now, this material world being everything. So grab power, get rich, have fun while you can. Right.
But God was offering them something that went beyond that, beyond what you can see and touch. A relationship with deeper meaning, a purpose that lasts, a hope that goes beyond this life.
And that's why them copying those other nations is such a tragedy. They were settling for a cheap imitation when they had the real thing right there.
So how did this clash of worldviews actually show up in the choices Samaria made? Did it affect their laws, their art, their daily lives? Let's get specific about the consequences.
You're asking how that clash, those worldviews, how did it actually play out? Well, one way is Samaria's legal system. God had given them laws, you know, to protect the vulnerable, widows, orphans. But as they got more into that material stuff, those laws, they kind of got ignored or twisted around to benefit the rich and powerful.
So their values changed and then their laws just like followed suit. It's like when your priorities are messed up, everything else gets out of whack.
Right, right. And their art too. Early Israelite art, it was a lot of abstract stuff, symbolic, pointing to something beyond the physical. But as Samaria got more influenced by their neighbors, their art became more about, you know, wealth, power, physical beauty, very what you see is what you get.
It's almost like they were trying to convince themselves that this world was all there was, even though, I don't know, maybe deep down they knew better. Like drowning out that little voice saying, this isn't right. This isn't the truth.
Yeah. And that brings us to the, I guess, the ultimate consequence, the fall of Samaria itself. And it wasn't just a military defeat. It was like their whole society just crumbled, conquered, capital city destroyed, people scattered.
So not just a change of leadership or a rough couple of years. It was their entire world.
Yeah.
Just gone. Makes you wonder if they ever looked back and thought, how did we end up here? What went wrong?
That's a good question. And while we can't know for sure what they were thinking, I mean, the Bible does say that a lot of them felt that regret, you know, realizing they traded something precious for, well, something pretty worthless.
Man, that's sad. But it's also like a wake-up call, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Our choices have consequences, and sometimes those consequences, they're big and they last a long time.
Like a ripple effect, you know? One little decision can set off this whole chain reaction, and you don't always see it right away. Sometimes it takes years, generations even, to see the full impact.
But even with all this destruction, the exile, Dr. Oswald, he points out something amazing. God's faithfulness, it never went away. Even as Samaria was falling apart, even as his people were facing what they'd done, he didn't abandon them.
He kept reaching out, sending prophets with messages of hope, talking about restoration. He promised that even in their exile, he'd be with them, and that eventually he'd bring them back to the land he'd promised.
So even in their darkest moment, there was this like glimmer of light, a promise that it wasn't over. That's powerful. But if God is so faithful, why did he let Samaria fall in the first place? Why not just step in and save them? I struggle with that sometimes, to be honest.
That's a question that, yeah, it's challenged people for a long time. No easy answers. But one way to think about it is free will. God made us with the ability to choose to love him or reject him, to obey or do our own thing.
So he's not like controlling us.
Yeah.
But if he isn't and he knows what's going to happen, doesn't that mean he's, I don't know, letting bad stuff happen? I'm not sure I like that idea.
It's a tough one, for sure. But maybe it's not about God letting things happen, but about him respecting our choices, even when those choices lead to bad stuff. And maybe, just maybe, he can use even our mistakes, our failures, our worst moments to bring about something good, something that redeems us.
That's an interesting way to look at it. It's like he's not just focused on us being comfy or happy right now, but on us growing, changing, becoming better in the long run. Like, I don't know, a parent letting their kid fall and scrape their knees so they learn to be careful next time.
That's a good analogy. And it gets to what Dr. Oswald says is the biggest lesson here, the importance of remembering God, not just in our heads, but in what we do, our choices, how we live every day.
So it's not enough to just have the right answers, the right beliefs. It's about living them out, making them real.
Right. And that's where Samaria's story is so relevant to us. It doesn't matter how advanced we are, our technology, our culture, we're still vulnerable to those same temptations. Okay. We still forget the one who truly matters.
sobering, but also like a challenge. To look at our own lives, find our own golden calves, and choose to put God first in everything we do.
And that brings us to what Dr. Oswald asks. What golden calves might we find in our own lives that need to be, I guess, dismantled so that how we live actually matches up with what we believe about God?
That's a big question, but one we have to face if we want to avoid making the same mistakes Samaria did. What are some practical ways we can start to see those golden calves and then, I don't know, get rid of them? What does that even look like in the 21st century?
Yeah, that's the question, isn't it? How do we actually do that? Dismantle those golden calves in our own lives. It's easy to talk about, but actually doing it, I think we all get a little lost there.
You're right. It's not easy. And the first thing, I think, is recognizing that these golden calves, they aren't always big, obvious things. Sometimes they're disguised as, you know, good things, success, security, comfort, even relationships. Like they sneak in looking all innocent, like something you'd want. And then before you know it, they've got you. Right. They're running the show, making your decisions for you.
Exactly. So you got to check yourself, your heart, your motivations regularly. Ask, what am I really going after here? What's pushing me to do this? Is it God or is it something else?
And that self-reflection thing, that can be rough, can't it? It's like looking in the mirror at your soul and actually being honest about what you see. It's way easier to just, I don't know, keep going, avoid the hard questions.
Easier, yeah. But it's also how you end up in trouble. Because if you're not willing to face those golden calves, they'll take you right down the same road Samaria went down.
And Dr. Oswald makes a good point about replacing those golden calves with something better, something real. Not enough to just tear the idols down. Got to fill that space with something that actually satisfies.
Right. And that something better, it's that deep relationship with God. Getting your life back in line with what he cares about, his values, his plan.
But how do we do that? Like, practically.
Oh, yeah.
It sounds good, but how do we actually make that change in our everyday lives? I mean, everywhere we look, it's focus on you, your success, your happiness. It's like swimming against the current.
Yeah, you're right. It's tough. But I think it starts small. Little choices, but you do them on purpose. Like choosing to spend time with God, praying, reading the Bible, choosing to be around people who lift you up in your faith, choosing to make decisions based on what God says, even when it's hard, even when it's not popular.
So those everyday choices that show you're committed to God, even though not the easy way, the comfy way.
That's it. Matching your actions to what you believe, remembering every choice matters, every single one, big or small, it either pulls you closer to God or further away.
And that brings us back to the Lord's Supper.
Yeah.
Do this in remembrance of me, you know. I hadn't thought about it like this before, but it's like a real, tangible way to remember what God did, to recommit to living because of it. I love how Dr. Oswald says it's not just for Sunday mornings, it's for life.
It is. And I think that's what this whole deep dive, this whole thing about Samaria, it's really saying. It's not enough to just hear about God or know about him. You got to actively remember him, let his truth, his love soak into everything you do, your thoughts, your words, your actions.
It's like taking your faith out of your head and making it real. Something we can all aim for wherever we are in our journey.
Absolutely. And even when we mess up, even when we fall short, even when we find ourselves chasing after those golden calves, God's grace, it's always there. He's always ready to forgive, to put things right, to get us back on track.
This has been, wow, a lot to think about, but also really encouraging. It reminds me that history, it's got something to teach us. Mm-hmm. And those Bible stories, they're not just old tales. They're like timeless truths that speak to, I don't know, something deep inside us.
They are. And they give us direction, hope, a way forward, even when the world feels crazy confusing.
So if you're listening and you're feeling that nudge, you know, to face some golden calves in your own life, you're not alone. We're all on this journey. And remember, God's grace is enough, his love doesn't change, and his promises, they're real. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. Until next time, keep searching, keep asking questions, and keep diving deep.